Wait, can I just say, open it up, and it says President Joe Biden on one of the sides.
Oh, is this president? Oh, I see it right here. Oh, right there. All right, Kareem, thank you for being here. We will be right back. Kareem Jean-Pierre.
People watch that garbage. You people watch the Rubin Report, hosted by Dave Rubin. That's me. It's April 24th in the year 2024. We are live streaming on Rumble, YouTube, and Locals. And fear not, you're not having any sort of medical condition. You didn't have a stroke. Your screen is not screwed up. I am a little bit lower on set today because we are set up for a live sit-down we're doing in here in an hour or two with Tulsi Gabbard, who I'm super excited to talk to again, especially in person. Obviously, a lot of chatter about maybe a VP situation with her and Trump. She very publicly left the Democrats. I'm always focused on the sane libs, which will kind of be part of the theme for today's show. So anyway, we already set up for the in-person sit-down, so I'm a little lower on set today. You have nothing to worry about. And before we get to the theme, we went through some numbers yesterday, and we've been really, I'm very proud to say, we've been crushing it across the board. We had something like 50 million views on YouTube last month, like 20 million on Rumble. The audio podcast has blown up. We crossed a billion views, all good stuff. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I think a little sanity goes a long way these days, and I thank and credit you guys for that. But as we were going through the numbers, Phoenix pointed out to me that 66% of you, 66.2% of you who watch this show on YouTube are not subscribed to the channel, and we would like to adjust that. So there is a subscription button right there. You don't have to pay a dime to click it. If you click it, then you have a better chance of seeing our videos, and our goal in the next 90 days is to get to 50%. 50% subscribers, 50% new people. It's actually great that so many new people are coming on board. I love that, but we'd love the base. To be subscribed, so please jump on board over there. And of course, as always, if you really want to support the show and throw in a couple bucks and keep us independent, rubinreport.locals.com. And one other thing before I get to the program. You know, yesterday was a wacky show. I think it might have been the wackiest, sort of zaniest show we've ever done. I really was like frustrated as all hell with what's going on in the world, and showing the clips of these ridiculous politicians and these insane woke protesters and all of the Hamas stuff. And it came to the backdrop of doing the Passover Seder the night before, where, you know, we're telling this story of slavery to freedom, and the fact that, you know, things like the 10 plagues and Moses splitting the sea actually makes more sense, I think, quite literally, than what is going on today. And I dropped a lot of F-bombs. I think we set a record on that. And many of you, I checked the comments across platforms yesterday, many of you seemed to feel it was very cathartic for you as well. Anyway, I think today will be a bit more of a traditional show. We will see. We're going to start with some stuff related to Elon Musk, who is just squarely still in this free speech fight. And a guy who I often play clips of, Morgan Freeman, Hollywood actor Morgan Freeman, a guy who got out of Shawshank, which was not an easy thing to do. And let's start with him talking about his feelings about Elon Musk.
I'm a huge fan of Elon Musk's, and I think he's got the most incredibly forward-thinking ideas about where we can go technologically. He's, you know, what he's done is nobody else has ever done. He's landed a rocket ship, so it's reusable. What a feat that is. Now we're taking off, we're going to be going to Mars, delivering stuff to people who are going to be settling there, just like they settled the old West, and bringing those ships back and landing them.
All right, so I know you guys know all the cool things that Elon has done, and the Tesla and Neuralink, and they've got literally paraplegics that can play chess with their mind right now. Like, there's so many amazing things the guy's done, building the underground tunnels, all of the stuff. You guys get that. And I don't think it's that important, actually, every time a Hollywood celebrity says something to point to them. However, what I really think could be happening right now is that we are on the precipice, I think, of actually having a renaissance in this country. Everyone agrees with most of us that are sane, and I do believe that it is most of us, actually, it is still the majority of us, see that the woke thing has gone completely crazy. Now, it's gonna keep going crazy, right? It doesn't have the self-correcting mechanism to fix itself. So it's going to keep going bananas, and the right's got some problems, but there's this huge swath of us that sit somewhere probably between, I don't know, say a Morgan Freeman, who's mostly a Hollywood lefty, and Elon Musk, who is the Renaissance man of our time. And if we can put that whole group of people together, I think that is the road to an America in the future that looks good. It's going to take some more good libs breaking and the rest of it. You guys get all that. Elon Musk saw that post and he shared it because, you know, it's sometimes nice to say nice things about people who say nice things about you. He wrote, Morgan Freeman is awesome. But I want to now show you one other clip. You've seen this is a compilation that we created. First, we're going to start. Remember a couple weeks ago when Don Lemon did that absolutely terrible hatchet job on Elon. Elon talking about how do we get past racism. And then we clip that with an old interview that Morgan Freeman did on 60 Minutes from about 15 years ago, talking about what the real solution is to racism. And I think you will see this is the key to getting out of the thing we are stuck in at the moment.
What future do we want? Is this something we want to make part of our constant dialogue forever? Or do we want to say, like, let's just move on and treat everyone, according to just who they are as an individual?
I agree with you with that. That's the ideal. But what the evidence shows is that that's not what's actually in practice.
I think we're doing it better than anywhere else.
That's true. I agree with that. But that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean a lot to a whole lot of people who aren't able to take advantage of the opportunities that you were able to take advantage of simply because the color of your skin.
Do you think that race plays a part in wealth distribution or either a mindset that you can't
today?
Or cannot? Yeah.
No.
You don't?
No, I don't. I know. You and I, we're proof. Why would race have anything to do with it? Put your mind to what you want to do and go for that.
You know, I said, and it's probably get me in trouble, but I said to some of my colleagues recently, so I know that it's an issue, but it seems like every single day on television I'm talking about race, and it's because of the news cycle, it's in the news, but sometimes I get so tired of talking about it, I want to just go, this is over, can we move on?
And if you talk about it, it exists.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like it exists and we refuse to talk about it. But making it a bigger issue than it needs to be is probably.
Quick correction, I said that the second portion of that was Morgan Freeman on 60 Minutes. That was the famous one with Mike Wallace that we've shown you guys a couple times. But he's making the same point to Don Lemon's face right there. So the question really is what happened to Don Lemon where, you know, 7-8 years ago in that interview with Morgan Freeman, he understood the obsession with race and why we have to get over it, and that his career and Morgan Freeman's career and lives are an example of how anyone can do anything in this country, how Lemon has now taken the reverse position because the system doesn't need him anymore, but Morgan Freeman is still telling the truth, and I want to create the conditions so that the Morgan Freemans and yes, those Bill Maher's and all of the rest can start voting the right way. That is the wide swath thing. We're going to talk more about that on the other side, as well as what the machine is doing to Elon Musk right now, because he's fighting for our ability to have free speech online. But first, let me talk to you guys about the contagion kit. Guys, the US government has collaborated with the Chinese scientists again on a project aiming at making certain strains of avian flu more infectious and more deadly. And eyes are on the University of Wisconsin while they run gain-of-function research on this bird flu strain. Sound familiar? So what do you think happens next? Someone gets infected with bird flu, of course. And then shockingly, scientists begin saying that this particular bird flu strain could be 100 times worse than COVID. So how long until forced masks, forced lockdowns, and forced vaccinations? Is this all to usher in the WHO's new pandemic treaty? We can speculate all day long, but what we do know is that the medical tyrants are far from done with us. Do you have what your family needs this time around? Ivermectin, HCQ. What about Tamiflu or a nebulizer? Most doctors still won't even consider prescribing these, but we've got you covered. Keep listening. Americans are waking up and understanding that now more than ever, we need these life-saving medications on hand. The only one of its kind, the prescription emergency kit from the wellness company, provides you with a carefully selected assortment of effective medications for bird flu, COVID-19, and other respiratory illnesses. Ivermectin, HCQ, as I said, Z-Pak, Tamiflu, Budesine, along with a nebulizer so you can rest easy knowing that you have emergency meds on hand, along with a guidebook for safe use. Backed by research from experts like Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Harvey Risch, The wellness company's Contagion Emergency Kit is a must-have. Every American should have at least one of these kits in their home. Avoid the chaos, wait times, and price of the hospital and have exactly what you need for as low as the cost of a single doctor's visit. Go to twc.health/Rubin and grab your Contagion Emergency Kit right now. That's twc.health/Rubin. Use code Rubin to save you $30 at checkout. Kits are available only in the U.S. of A. So why is it that I always play these clips of that very famous African-American Elon Musk? Yes, he is African-American from South Africa. Well, it's not because he's done some really cool stuff with Tesla, and it's not because he's done some really cool stuff with, I don't know, going to Mars or building those underground railroads or Neuralink or anything else. The main reason is because he bought X, thus ushered in, dare I say, a new renaissance of free speech online, because all of the forces that be and all of big tech was working against us to stifle free speech. The guy throws $44 billion down on a company purging money with a whole bunch of activists working there, connections with the government, to now be in the fight, treated horribly by the media and everything else. And it just absolutely continues. Check this out. This is a video from Sky News, an interview with the Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese going after Elon because Elon isn't censoring enough.
I want to ask you about Elon Musk. He's mocked you this morning for choosing censorship and propaganda over free speech and truth. What's your response to that?
Well, this is a bloke who's chosen ego and showing violence over common sense. I think that Australians will shake their head when they think that this billionaire is prepared to go to court fighting for the right to sow division and to show violent videos, which are very distressing. He is in social media, but he has a social responsibility in order to have that social license. And what has occurred here is that the eSafety Commissioner has made very sensible suggestions. Other social media companies have complied without complaint. But this bloke thinks he's above the Australian law, that he's above common decency.
What happens if the vision in question here isn't taken down?
Well, of course, there is a court order has been put in place. It's a sensible proposition. No one is above the law. Not Elon Musk, not any Australian citizen. When it comes to operating here in Australia.
Guys, the Australian government just has sensible suggestions, just like when they had some of the most Orwellian and authoritarian lockdowns during COVID. They were suggestions, but if you kind of don't do them, they might have to arrest you, might have to take you away from your family. By the way, Elon Musk is above Australian law in that he is not a citizen of Australia. Twitter is not an Australian company. Now, I understand they may have offices there and they may operate there in that Australians obviously are on Twitter, X. But Elon is in this fight and he is ready to continue this fight. We'll show you how in just a moment. But it's interesting because, you know, if it wasn't for Twitter showing us some of the violence that has occurred over these last 6 months, largely it would have been censored. It's important that people see, say, the horrific acts of October 7th, so people know that it's real, right? We have, with all the video evidence of it, people still question whether it was real or not, right? So would it just be better if the powers that be wouldn't let us see certain things for our own good? Or could we see things and choose whether we want to watch them or share them or anything else? Anyway, Elon caught wind of what the Australian Prime Minister said, and he put up a fantastic meme. I mean, this says it right here. He says, don't take my word for it, just ask the Australian Prime Minister. And you can see this young boy, and he's got a path. He's got a, which way do you want to go? And one way is free speech. That's what the Australian Prime Minister doesn't want, because he wants to protect you. He wants his sensible suggestions, which is also known as what you can do on the right side of that, censorship and propaganda, which is why the Australian Prime Minister isn't pissed at YouTube, which obviously censors, and why some of you don't see my videos for weeks. We see that all the time. We hear that all the time. Or Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, which we'll get to in a moment, et cetera, et cetera. So that really is it. I want to flash to one other thing about, or a couple other things about Elon, but one more video right here, which is, this was about a week before October 7th. And I mention that because he's on stage with Benjamin Netanyahu. I think this was in Austin, Texas, after they had visited the Tesla factory. And here they are talking about how history is won. And I think you will see where we are going with this.
You know, like there's an old saying, like history is written by the victors. It's like, well, yes, but not if your enemies are still alive and have a lot of time on their hands to edit Wikipedia.
History is written by the people who can harness the most editors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the loser has just got a lot of time on their hands, and you know, it's just, what are they going to do? Edit Wikipedia? Literally.
You know, it's funny, but it really is true. So in the old days, if you won a war, you could write history about the war, right? And we can all debate whether that was good or that gave us the truest version of history, et cetera, et cetera. But now, it's not that you can just win a war, an ideological war or a physical war. You also have to win the war on Wikipedia. You have to win the algorithm war. You have to win the big tech war. Otherwise, nobody will even see that a victory has actually been accomplished. I want to show you another piece. This Elon tweeted this out as well. We're going very heavy on Elon today. He put up this graph. This is really wild, talking about how the woke mind virus takes over legacy media. So what you're seeing on that graph are mentions of the word racist, racists, and racism in the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal. So this is legacy media, and it starts at 1970, and then basically till about 2010, little variants up and down, okay, racist, racism, and racist, a little bit mentioned here or there, maybe little things happened here and there. You can see a little bit of a spike in what appears to be right after 1990, because the O.J. Simpson thing was around 1994. But then look what happens right around starting in 2010, when the woke thing really started bursting forth. There has been an unbelievable explosion in those terms. Now, is that because we are really more racist now? Is there more racism in America? There might be, because the woke people are trying to actually turn people into racists. Or is it because the legacy media used this to manipulate us and unearth this thing that we now see burst forth on our college campuses? My friend and brilliant professor from Concordia University in Canada, although I really want him to move to the free state of Florida, Gad said, he had a great tweet on this. He said, for many years now, I have warned that the path that the West is taking will result in civil war. It might take 5 years, 50 years, or 100 years, but it is inevitable. The West could have repeatedly resolved these issues peacefully, but it refuses to autocorrect from its path of civilizational suicide. Many Western men who are currently asleep at the wheel will wake up and realize that they don't like being pushed around in their homelands. They don't like their women attacked. They don't like their freedoms curtailed. They don't like their faiths disrespected. Once this happens, prepare for some gargantuan ugliness. Those who think that they are gaining inroads in the West will soon find out that not all Western men are invertebrate castrati. Save this tweet and never forget who warned you. And doesn't it kind of feel like we're getting there? When you have chants for genocide at our elite universities and Jewish students can't show up, and we have told an entire generation that their genitals have nothing to do with their gender, and all of the confusion, and that America is not good. You do that, and over years and years and years, you get it to a point where then good people are going to wake up, and then we could end up in that civil war situation. By the way, Gadsad knows a little something about civil war, having grown up in Lebanon, and he fled Lebanon during the civil war. His parents were kidnapped by Palestinian terrorists. It's an absolutely insane story that he has written about. And you can check, I think, one of our first interviews, you can find that. The story all about that is just wild. So anyway, let's connect this, that stark warning that Gadsad is offering right there. Let's connect this with what's going on at Columbia University, which has basically become ground zero for the Hamas-led lunacy at our universities. There is a Jewish professor who is a lefty. This guy has been a lefty his entire life. I think he marched with BLM. So yes, they eat their own. He now has been barred entry at Columbia because the administration is saying they can't protect him. Check this out. This is it happening in real time. This is absolutely wild.
media in? Is the university keeping the media out? This is the COO of the university. Are we not letting the media in?
Can you back up, please?
My card has been deactivated? Yeah. Why?
Can you back up, please?
Wait. Whoa. Everybody, my card has been deactivated. This is Cass Holloway, the COO. This is Gerald Lewis. They were in the meeting where I asked them if Hamas is a terror organization, and they couldn't say that it is a terrorist organization. Why? I'm a professor. Why can't I?
Shai,
we
are willing to take you to the math lawn.
No, I am a professor here.
We are alumnus. We have a right.
Whoa. Everybody quiet. I am a professor here. I have every right to be everywhere on campus. You cannot let people that support Hamas on campus and me, a professor, not go on campus. Let me in now.
Let us in.
No. Everybody silence. Everybody. Over here we got the COO of Columbia University, Mr. Cass Holloway. Wait, no. They have deactivated. They have deactivated my card. They are not letting me on campus because...
Shame on you! I have not just a civil right
as a Jewish person to be on campus. I have a right as a professor employed by the university to be on campus. They deactivated my card. These are 5 lawsuits in happening, but we don't want to sue. We just want to be Jewish in public. Let us sue.
Okay, so understand what's going on here. This guy has every right to be on that campus right now. He is a professor on that campus. He was not instigating violence or calling for genocide or anything else, which is happening on that campus quite literally at this very second, I have no doubt. And the COO of the university decided to not let him in. He basically, you could hear him sort of whisper there, oh, we'll escort you to one area. But he has every right, like every other professor, to be in any other area. And if the idea is, oh, we're watching out for you because they might kill you, then is the problem him, the professor, or is the problem the Hamasniks that you guys have taught and brainwashed into this evil ideology? I think you guys know the answer to that. I want to show you a clip from Jordan Peterson, because one of the things that he did quite often when we were on tour together, Jordan would ask the crowd, how many of you would be Nazis? And of course, nobody raises their hand. Nobody thinks that, oh, if this was 1930s Germany, I would be a Nazi. And it's not that every Nazi exterminated people, right? It's not that every Nazi killed Jews or gypsies or anyone else. It's that people just kind of went along with things. And I would liken that to the COO of Columbia right there. First off, he apparently won't say that Hamas is a terrorist organization. So that you have that in and of itself. But here he is sort of acting in coordination with them. So we'll keep the Jew off campus so that, you know, the crazy people can run the asylum. And I think you will understand how Jordan laid this out when he would often ask this question.
It wasn't only stupid people who got tangled up in this. It was pretty much everybody who got tangled up in it. And one of the things you might think about, and this is worth thinking about, is that if you were there, for any one of you, there's a 90% chance that you would have got tangled up in it. You know, you wouldn't have been the person who rescued the gypsies. It's like, forget that. It's like, unless you think that, you know, you're heroic far beyond the average, and I would be very, very careful about assuming that, you could assume instead that you would have been swept along with the crowd just like everyone else, because everyone else was. And there's some indication, you know, there's some individual responsibility for that of some indeterminate nature. Like, if you live in a country where everyone's turned into a fascist murderer, like, is that your fault? Well, you know, it's not obvious that an individual should be held responsible for the actions of an entire country. But then again, the country's made up of individuals. So it's a very difficult problem to solve. You know, and one of the tenets of Western law is that you don't hold an individual responsible for the actions of the group, even if he or she happens to be a member, willingly or unwillingly, of that group. And it's not just a few people that are like that. And we found out from the Stanford Prison Experiment, which every psychologist likes to think of as immoral, you know, because we actually discovered something with it, that if you gave ordinary people the opportunity to be fascist barbarians, in 6 days, 30% of them would be.
Ordinary people can do horrible things. And guess what? Most of the German citizens in the 1920s and 1930s were ordinary people, and they got caught up in a radical, evil ideology. Do you think that's kind of a little bit of what might be happening right now? And that COO right there of Columbia, like, he's saying, I will side with the bad guys. I will not allow a professor who has every, doesn't even matter the professor's religion or anything else. He's a professor at this university. We are not letting him on campus because we can't protect him. Like, that doesn't mean you're exactly the Nazi, but you're circling around it. If you don't think that what's going on at Columbia has gone completely insane, well, as of yesterday, I think we found this out just before we did our live stream, they are no longer having in-class classes on the campus. Here's a tweet from Colin Rugg. Columbia University has announced classes will be remote for the rest of the year as anti-Israel protests rock the school. There are now growing calls for tuition refunds for the $70,000-a-year college that now has practically turned into an online school. So they are shutting down the campus. The campus has been taken over by Hamas supporters. And yes, they are Hamas supporters. They are terror supporters, right? There's only one solution, river to the sea, all of that stuff. There's nobody out there with the sign, Hamas bad, guys. I'm pro-Palestinian. Free the Palestinians from Hamas. So they're going all in on that. And I am incredibly sympathetic to that average student. Forget religion. He doesn't have to be Jewish. He doesn't have to be any of those. Imagine you're just some kid who accomplished your dream. You worked hard your entire life to get to Columbia, one of the greatest places of higher education, supposedly, in the country. And now you cannot go to school at Columbia because a bunch of Hamas supporters have taken over the campus. And the administrators have acted sort of in concert with the modern Nazis by not stepping up and being adults and kicking them off campus and saying, you cannot do that here. And by the way, it is all unbelievably coordinated and well-funded, just like BLM is. This is just BLM unmasked, although ironically, they're all wearing masks. Check this out. This is from a random Twitter account called Strawman, but I thought they really nailed it. Yeah, REI, I'd like to order 400 Coleman Skydome two-person tents. Yes, you can charge it to the grassroots, totally spontaneous movement to liberate Palestine, 11 Yahweh Sinyarway, Doha, Qatar. And if what you're looking at there, for those of you on the audio podcast, all of the tents that they have, these are REI, right? These are expensive tents. How is it that they all have the same tent? They all have the same equipment. They are being handed pieces of paper that tell them how to not be arrested or how to link arms with people so that they can stop other people from getting onto campus. This is a coordinated movement that is well-funded, that is offering material support, in essence, at this point to Hamas. I want to show you a great video of my friend Megyn Kelly, mincing no words, as always, when she found out that Columbia was canceling in-person classes.
In-person classes. The gates to Harvard Yard have been closed, and at NYU, an encampment swelled to hundreds of protesters.
Ashhadu anna la ilaha illa Allah. Ashhadu anna la ilaha illa Allah.
The school says it warned the crowd to leave, then called in the cops after the university said it learned of reports of, quote, intimidating chants and several anti-Semitic incidents. Shortly after 8:30 p.m., officers began making arrests. Watch. It's total chaos as people try to keep their little tents that they've set up around themselves. The cops try to instill order, and they're throwing things at cops.
Okay. So they have closed the campus. There will be no classes there. They have acquiesced to the mob. It will now get worse. And not only will it get worse, it will now be replicated on other college campuses, right? Because I always play that video to you guys of Jordan Peterson on Joe Rogan where he talks about the test. If you want to push people, you don't push them all overnight, right? You push, you see how they react. You push again, you see how they react. You push again and see how they react. And what we have seen so far as it pertains to these protests is you can push, meaning they can push and they can call for genocide and everything else. And what will happen? Well, they'll bar professors from the university. They will make sure that Jewish students aren't safe at the university. They will literally close the campus. So you can push them and they sort of like to be pushed. And if you don't think, if hearing the Muslim prayers and everything, like, isn't that bizarre that this somehow the queers for Palestine are chanting Muslim prayers? Like, this does not end well for you idiots. But if you are not concerned about where this all might be headed, I think we can connect this to something else that's going on in this country, because we have also allowed 7 million illegals into this country. We don't know how many people at these rallies are even legal citizens. We don't know how many of them are students of Columbia. They're all masked and everything else. And then this came out. This is from Tom Winter, who is, I suppose, a journalist at NBC. We are increasingly concerned about the potential for some kind of coordinated attack here on the homeland, which may not be that different from what you saw against the concert hall in Russia a few weeks ago from ISIS-K, FBI Director Christopher Wray says. So that's what they're telling us. The FBI is now concerned that we might get some mass terrorism here. And it's, you could definitely connect this to Gad Saad's tweet earlier. It's obviously on the way. Whether it's the illegals that have come here that maybe are sympathetic with Hamas, or wonder whether it's one of these genderqueer, brain-damaged Hamasniks who will do something for the cause or whatever else, it seems like it is here. And then the question is, what will we all do? What will we all do? And I mean, you personally watching this, how will you change behaviors in your life, decide how you're going to protect your family and everything else? Like, that's part of it. But it's also, where are you going to live? What schools are you going to send your kids to, et cetera, et cetera? And speaking of schools that you're going to send your kids to, this is actually a bit of a white pill moment on some of this. This is from Jacob Wheeler. Breaking, Brandeis University extends the transfer application deadline to May 31st as anti-Semitism accelerates on college campuses. Students elsewhere should know we welcome all Jews and students from every background who seek an excellent undergraduate education at an environment and an environment striving to be free of harassment and Jew hatred to apply, the school said. Look, you guys know my policy on this. I don't think a college education is necessary. I think you get an apprenticeship. We just hired two new interns yesterday that we pay, by the way, for our interns. I think there's all sorts of ways that you can get the proper experience for a good career and a purposeful life without going to college. I think there's some benefits of college, and it would be nice if colleges taught you, you know, how to think instead of what to think, and it's good to get away from your folks for a little bit and all of that stuff. But if the Hamas people have taken over Columbia and they've taken over NYU, and we know that this will be replicated at Berkeley and a whole bunch of other schools, anyone that's watching this that owns a business, you got to make sure you're never going to hire anyone that goes to those schools. Like, okay, you can have those places. Like, Columbia can't be fixed now. It's like saying, can San Francisco be fixed? There are 30,000 fentanyl-laced zombies there, thanks to Gavin Newsom. It can't really be fixed, at least not anytime soon. So congratulations. Now, Columbia, I don't know how many undergrads you have, but however many Hamas people are there, they've now infected the entire university to the point that it is in effect. It is now closed. So let them have that, and good for Brandeis. Brandeis, and then what's going to happen is, in a couple of years, there's going to be people at major corporations who are looking to hire the right people, and they're going to look at resumes, and they're going to be like, well, let's see, this person went to Columbia. Oh, they were a volunteer at the Queers for Palestine parade. That's very interesting. Oh, they slept in a tent for 3 nights and talked about how they wanted to kill all the Jews. Well, that's something. Okay. And let me look at this one. Oh, this guy went to Brandeis and he actually learned an education and he volunteered properly. And you see, and that is how we will beat these people, by building new things. I want to connect this more largely to what's going on social media as it pertains to all of this, because every now and again, once in a while, I suppose, at the televised mental institution known as MSNBC, somebody comes on there and says something sane. They had NYU professor Scott Galloway on. Now, Scott Galloway, he is a liberal. He is a lefty for most of his life. I believe he still considers himself a liberal. Yes, I'm getting a head nod from Phoenix. He is still a liberal. But here he is talking about how China has done so much of the destruction when it comes to our youth's brains.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protest. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
Why is there still that double standard?
I think it's complicated. I think, one, young people have a healthy gag reflex on what people our age think. And I think that's healthy. Two, I don't think Israel has draped itself in glory over the last 20 or 30 years. They've shifted from being kind of the David to the Goliath. I also think that incorrectly, students on campus conflate the civil rights movement with what is going on in Palestine and have digressed, unfortunately, because of an orthodoxy promoted by me and my colleagues, that there are oppressors and oppressed. And the easiest way to identify oppressors is how white and how rich they are, or fairly or unfairly, Israel is seen as ground zero for whiteness and how wealthy they are. And then what might sound paranoid, but doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, who their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convinced they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization.
All right. I don't even agree with everything he says there. And as I said, he still considers himself a liberal. We're working on doing a sit down with him because I think there's a lot to talk about. But the main part I wanted to talk about there was what he's saying at the end, that for every one pro-Israel video that there is on TikTok, there's 52, you know, in effect pro-Hamas videos. That is how over time they break brains, because we know that for the last 5 years or so, since TikTok has become just sort of the ubiquitous app for young people, this is how they've confused so many kids about their gender. So if you were China and you really wanted to be the one world power, you wanted to take out America, wouldn't it be pretty damn good for a couple of years, sow a lot of confusion in kids' brains about their gender, then make them think that somehow Israel's really bad and the terrorists, Hamas, are the good guys, and that somehow by Israel being bad, that also means that America's bad. Then instigate, help them instigate protests at universities and more just chaos, general chaos, groups of people that can shut down roads and bridges and airports and everything else. So there's another layer of a war going on here. There's an information war, and then there's literally a geopolitical war here that is going on sort of, I guess, in the metasphere with us and China. I want to show you one more clip of that. Of Scott Galloway on MSNBC. Here he is absolutely demolishing Mika Brzezinski. Mika Brzezinski, who is the wife of Joe Scarborough. And well, just watch this.
One of my pet peeves seems to be one of your pet peeves. And that is, 2 million people have been killed in the Sudan civil war. I haven't seen a protest at NYU for that. Assad killed 500 Arabs. I didn't see colleges burned down. 500,000 Arabs killed by Assad. Saddam Hussein killed over 1 million Muslims in wars. I gassed them. I didn't see protests there. And yet your school is shut down right now because Israel is responding to the worst attack against Jews worldwide since the Holocaust. Help us sort through that.
And we can debate that response.
Again, I don't know algebra, but I'm pretty good at the common denominators here and why there's no common denominators in all of these. It's just that it's Jews defending their homeland. Because if you look at the numbers, even with American wars, they don't add up.
Well, first off, good to be with you. And I especially appreciate your leadership on this issue. I'll give you some more numbers. 2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in one night. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. You had, if Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country, and then they incurred into Texas, and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people, or the population of the University of Texas, and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the great Sonora radioactive parking lot. But Jews are not allowed, and Israel is not allowed, to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians is, of civilian death to combatant mortality, is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce, but unlike America or any other Western nation that has attacked this viciously, they're not allowed to win a war. It's a double standard.
Man, Galloway is really good, right? Like, that's really good, the way he can elucidate the truth out of this. It, by the way, it's not to defend every decision that America's ever made and was, after 9/11, going to Iraq a mistake. I mean, it largely was, right? We killed an awful lot of people. Saddam, as he said, or as Joe said before, killed 1 million Muslims. Nobody seemed to care about that. But there's only one country on earth that is somehow not allowed to win a war, and that when they defend themselves, they are then told that they are the bad guys. The reason I said that that was a destruction of Mika is because, as Joe Scarborough, who's having like a moment of lucidity, he's been somewhat decent on this issue, as he's laying out a really good question, like what is really going on here with this hypocrisy as it pertains to Israel, Then Mika's like, and we can debate what they, we can debate their response and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, shut up, bitch. Anyway, oh, see, that was a little, sorry, that was the one leftover from yesterday. Okay, I'm okay now. Anyway, I'm always talking about the sane libs and what do we do with the sane libs and how can we wake the sane libs up? Well, my favorite sane lib at the moment is a man who had literal brain damage 6 months ago. And of course, I'm talking about John Fetterman. And as his brain has healed, he has become sane and thoughtful and now really one of the few moderates in the Democrat Party. Here he is talking about how civility is not working as it pertains to these Hamas protesters.
But it is not appropriate or legal, or it's helpful to advance your argument if you show up in a Starbucks with a bullhorn and start yelling at people, and that doesn't make you noble, it just makes you an asshole. It's very American to protest and to do that in the appropriate way, then I absolutely support that. I'm not suggesting that you have to agree with my view, but it's just saying it doesn't really allow you to disrupt lives and to inflict those kinds of damages on people that are just trying to get on with their lives.
So there you have a guy in a hoodie who, again, had serious medical issues and was having trouble stringing sentences together. And I made an awful lot of fun of him, and I'm somewhat sorry about it when he was running for Senate. There he is making sense. You bust into Starbucks and you start screaming at people. There was this video going around yesterday of some crazed activist getting in Alec Baldwin's face, demanding that he say Free Palestine while he's at Starbucks. And it's like, man, you made Alec Baldwin look good, right? Like, that is not easy to do, but these people will not stop. And what they're doing, the real reason I'm showing you that clip is they are destroying any ability for us to have civility with one another. If every time you walk into Starbucks, you're gonna be yelled at by a Hamasnik, or when you walk onto a college campus, there's going to be another protester gonna be yelling at people, or Muslim call to prayer or anything else. Like, over time, it will degrade a society to the point where Gad Saad from that tweet moments ago will be completely right. You will have pushed people just way too far, and then wait to see what happens after that. Anyway, I've got a tweet here from John Fetterman about the radicalism of the Democrats because he has become one of the sane ones. He's quoting a New York Times story called How the Squad and Like-Minded Progressives Have Changed Their Party. And he writes, the Democrats who are now openly talking about putting conditions on aid to Israel are hardly on the fringe. That's a quote from the article itself. He writes, count the Dem votes against Israel. That's the fringe, and that's how many votes they got. I'm A with no conditions for Israel and $9 billion in Palestinian aid. Now, interestingly, the author of that article is Mara Gay, unrelated to Claudine Gay, who, as far as I know, who is the former president of Harvard, who has now kept her $900,000 teaching gig over there, despite her absolute lunacy. But Mara Gay once wrote a piece in the New York Times about how Dave Rubin regularly hosts white supremacists on the Dave Rubin Show, a show that doesn't exist. And as far as I know, I've never hosted a white supremacist, but that's what you get out of the New York Times. Anyway, the reason I'm showing you all of that is because we've got to get these people there. I think Fetterman, it's sort of what I said about RFK at the beginning, right? I said, RFK, I don't know if you're gonna be a Republican by the end, but I don't think you're gonna be a Democrat. And my guess is John Fetterman is gonna have a very public breakup with the Democrat Party. I don't know when, but I bet it's coming. And interestingly, I've got her book right there. It's just out of arm's reach. But Tulsi Gabbard, who will be sitting in here this afternoon, is another sane liberal, not lunatic lefty, who just wrote a book. It's called For Love of Country. What does it say? Leave the Democratic Party Behind. Pretty clean and clear on what she's going for there. And I would say this Scott Galloway, professor, he's probably on his way out. A guy like Elon is already out the door. Morgan Freeman's probably on the way out. Many more. So we've got to get them. And the reason we've got to get them, now I'll connect it to what's going on sort of politically at the moment, is because we have an election problem right now. Check this out. Because, you know, we're still going through the primary process, even though obviously Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee and Joe Biden's the presumptive nominee. But look at this. Nikki Haley got nearly 17% of the vote in yesterday's Republican primary in Pennsylvania, 6 weeks after she quit the race. This is a huge red flag for the Trump campaign in a battleground state. Many Republicans will never vote for Donald Trump. That's just a random Twitter account called Republicans Against Trump. But the point is that Nikki Haley, who dropped out, she's been out for over a month, 16% of the people in Pennsylvania that voted in the primary, over 150,000 people, they voted for her. So that means they didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, and they and instead of just not even showing up, they actually went to the polling place to vote for Nikki Haley, who they knew had no chance. That is a freaking red flag, Republicans, and that is why I am so focused on widening the Republican thing as much as possible, even though I am by no stretch a traditional Republican. But we've got to capture these people, and I want to show you another guy that we must capture, because he's been making a whole hell of a lot of sense, but seems to have some problems leaving the reservation. So Stephen A. Smith, ESPN guy, who's been waking up and he's doing some good work, and I'd love to sit down with him at some point. We played a clip of him from Fox a couple days ago, I think it was early, or it was late last week, where he was talking about why black people will break to Trump, and why they are breaking to Trump, and why they've had it with the Democrats. Anyway, all hell broke loose because he said that. He never said that he himself was gonna vote for Trump. He has never said that. All he said is there's reasons why black people are waking up. Well, the mob went after him, and Stephen A., who has made great strides in this, here he is giving an apology, and you never, Stephen, if you're watching, you never apologize to the mob when you have nothing to apologize for, but he did.
I want it to touch on something that I made news about just a few days ago. Let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. Accountability is where everything needs to begin in this world. It's something I say quite often. I certainly never hesitate to hold folks accountable when mistakes or mishaps occur, so I'm certainly not about to run from it myself. I'm fully aware that I've been in the news over the last few days, paraded all over social media as well, after comments I made during my appearance on Fox News' Hannity last week with the one and only Sean Hannity himself. And I'm fully aware of the outcry that has ensued because of it. A lot of folks in Black America seem pretty pissed at me right now, from friends and loved ones to colleagues, contemporaries, and dare I say, even the NAACP itself. Quite a few folks were put off, if not flat out offended, after my words were interpreted as associating support for Trump from the black community with all the legal issues he's facing. For that, I sincerely apologize. To be clear, my words were misconstrued. I'm stating right here for the record that my words were taken out of context, misrepresenting and depicting me in a way I found every bit as insulting and disrespectful as folks in Black America evidently felt about what they thought I said. But I'll own it anyway.
Okay, so this is super interesting. And Stephen A., I'm not going after you here, and I'd love to sit down with you, but your words weren't misconstrued. All you did, you never said that you were going to vote for Trump. You just laid out how there are reasons that the black community might want to vote for Trump as it pertains to the economy and crime and drugs and everything else, right? So you never said you were going to vote for him. You laid out an honest case. Your words weren't misconstrued, but the machine went after you. And I guess maybe you haven't been awake long enough, not woke, I guess you haven't been awake long enough to understand you don't apologize when there is no reason to apologize. Now, interestingly, I'm going to show you one more clip for this, because moments later, he sort of retracts everything he says because he kind of knows that he didn't do anything wrong.
The support he appears to be receiving in the polls was what was being discussed. Five polls, count them, five. Emerson, NBC News, Daily Goss, Acos, New York Times, and Rasmussen, all big national polls, had Trump leading over the last few weeks. Plus, according to 538, recent local polls also put Trump ahead in battleground states. He's up 6 points in Michigan, Arizona, and Georgia each. Insofar as Trump gaining support in the black community, well, how about various publications with these headlines? The Chicago Tribune: this time Trump really does seem to be making black voter inroads. Why? The Washington Post: voters of color are shifting right. Are Democrats doomed? How about the New York Times? As black voters drift to Trump, Biden's allies say they have work to do. Axios wrote: big Biden bummer. New York Times Siena poll shows gaps with key demographic groups. Wall Street Journal: Biden loses support among black men. The Hill: Biden losing support among black voters in swing states. Why did I say all of that? Because I want to show you I didn't just open my mouth. I read, I listened, and I've seen a momentum shift, as we all have. Anywhere I appear, no matter my subjectivity relating to what I feel, is still going to be based on facts being presented into the stratosphere.
So I'm showing you guys that for a reason, because I think we all know people like that. People who are getting there, then they get hit by the mob, and then they kind of go back and cower. And that's really unfortunate. And I suspect that Stephen A. Smith will get there. You know, I know everybody, okay, Bill Maher may never get there. I think Stephen A. may by election time. But if you really are paying attention to what he did there, he apologized for laying out why the black community might be breaking a bit more towards Trump. He says his words were misconstrued. And then in the second clip I showed you, he just completely lays out why his words were not misconstrued. And that, in fact, there is a lot of evidence that black people are breaking towards Trump. It's okay, Stephen A. Like, the funny thing is, I haven't bent the knee in so long that I don't remember what that hostage situation is like, I suppose. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember what it would be like. People say horrible things about me on Twitter all the time, like things you cannot imagine. Or in real life every now and again. Not people never come up to me and say real things because they're always cowards behind screens. But I mean, people that I know every now and again will say something about what I'm doing and they don't like what I'm doing, you know, friends or family or whatever. But it's like to bend the knee to a group of people that would never grant you any grace, it just makes no sense. But I think you'll get there, Stephen A. So just put a pin in this one that I think you will see that offering the apology, it doesn't get you any cred. If anything, it erodes some cred with the new people that you're finding. I want to connect this to one more thing from Scott Galloway, Professor Scott Galloway over at NYU, because there is a reason all of this is happening. So many of our institutions, so much of our education, our culture has just failed young people. That is just true. That is unfortunate and true, and that's what we've got to fix. And because when you have a whole group of young people that think that America is systemically racist and that we're imperialist and colonialist and that their vaginas are penises and all that stuff, they start getting a little screwy in the head. And they, oh, by the way, and then you put them on SSRIs, so now they're drugged. You tell them that everyone's coming to shoot them, all of the stuff. That until we deal with how America has betrayed its youth, this stuff is going to continue.
So in America, we've decided to try and create a super class of billionaires. And then if they win the gold medal, we're going to give them the silver and the bronze. Two biggest tax deductions, capital gains and mortgage interest. Who owns homes and stocks? People my age. Who doesn't know? Who rents and makes their money from current income? Young people. So we've decided that the wealthiest people in the world should get exceptionally more wealthy. Minimum wage stuck at $9.25. Stock market is screamed up. The average 70-year-old is 72% wealthier than they were 40 years ago. The average person under the age of 40 is 24% less wealthy. We are purposely transferring more wealth from the poor and middle class to the upper class to the super rich and from young to old. I think it all ties into what we're talking about on campuses. For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, and they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down, and the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own the housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? That is a liberal. I'm going to guess he's probably almost exclusively voted for Democrats. If we get him on the show, I'll ask him in person. But that is a liberal, a sane liberal, properly diagnosing the problem. That is pretty damn impressive because they do still exist and we've got to get them. He's throwing out a lot of Jordan Peterson stuff. Look what we've done to young men, right? He's throwing a lot of conservative stuff out there. Look what we've done to the economy, right? So we can fix this and we can have this wide tent, but we have to give them an answer that makes sense. Otherwise, they will all end up in Hamas, literally or figuratively. They will literally end up in Hamas, or they will mentally end up in Hamas, in a place of just the sheer destruction of everything we know. And I'd like to end the show with my friend Constantine Kissin, who gave a great speech just about that, that we better find that freaking alternative or we will give them all away.
Hello and thank you. Alexander Solzhenitsyn once said that the strength or weakness of a society depends more on the level of its spiritual life than on its level of industrialization. If a nation's spiritual energies have been exhausted, he said, it will not be saved from collapse by the most perfect government structure or by any industrial development. A tree with a rotten core cannot stand. The moral of the story is the history of our civilization was not made by people who always got everything right. It was made by people who'd made mistakes too. It was made by people who dared to believe that they could solve the problems they faced. The story of the West is a story of audacity. The big debates of the last decade, the culture war, the polarization, are about one thing and one thing only, the future. There are people like us in this room who believe that our future is to be prosperous, powerful, and influential. We are the majority. But there are also some people whose brains have been broken by an excess of education, who believe that our history is evil, that we do not deserve to be great, we do not deserve to be powerful, that we must be punished for the sins of our ancestors. To them, our past is abominable, our present must be spent apologizing, and our future is managed decline. And finally, I say to our friends in politics, many of you here are conservatives. I'm not, I look terrible in tweed. That's why I identify as politically non-binary. But I can tell you conservatives something. You will never get young people to want to conserve a society and an economy that is not working for them. We will not overcome woke nihilism as long as young people are locked out of the housing market, unable to pair up, unable to have kids, unable to plan for the future. We are in the fight of our lives. And if courage means anything, it means doing the right thing and being willing to take the punishment if you have to. Let me say it again. All death is certain. We do not get to choose whether we live or die. We only get to choose whether we live before we die. Thank you very much.
That's basically it, guys. Like, that's kind of it in a nutshell. Like, maybe we don't have all the answers, but I think the answers that we have and the basic truths that we have are a lot better than the alternative. But if we don't elucidate it, if we don't speak it, if we don't show it to young people, then they will be like, you know what, let's go to Columbia and burn this place down and let's support people who would gladly behead us in other circumstances and everything else. So that's the opportunity for us. And I think we've got it. And I am going to keep finding, widening that lane so that we can have that renaissance. Because we don't have to give it to the bad guys. We really don't. We really don't. I have to say, this was a hell of a comeback show after what happened yesterday, the emotional outburst. I should also note that part of the reason I think I was so nuts yesterday is I mentioned at the top of the show that I was so sore. I've been playing a ton of basketball and lifting again. My whole body hurt. I had this like crazy pain in my neck and my shoulder. And I was like in pain while I was doing the show. I had a most bananas massage yesterday. I had this guy come over who just put me basically into a pretzel for 90 minutes last night. I feel much better. And I think it all kind of fell into place. So there you go. Guys, part one of my interview with my good buddy Pete Pagosian is up right now. Full things on Locals, absolutely ad-free. We've got a post-game show in about 30 seconds, rubinreport.locals.com. People of the Internet is live at 1 p.m. And a secondary callback. If you have not subscribed, click that subscription button. It does not cost you a cent. It costs you one click. For the price of one click, you can save a baby. The choice is yours. Goodbye.
must do is continue to be vigilant and fighting for folks who have a right to be seen and their circumstances to be.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Because we have the ability to actually alleviate the burdens that people are carrying that make it difficult for them to get through the day or the month.
What the hell are you talking about?
To have an impact on tomorrow. And we can't shortchange the significance of that.
I don't know whether people realize how much of a burden this is. It's cruel. Come on, give me a break here.
Out to be a model of the
what's going on here? I don't understand what the point you're trying to make.
Of a democracy to coexist with an economic strength and power.
Why me, God?
You can see this and aspire to this and reject autocracy.
None of this is worth it. None of this is worth it.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the post-game wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.